So, what exactly is a boo? That was the question that I asked the other day when a colleague of mine going back many years, who I worked with on the radio with many times, was saying, you really should do a talky thing sometime. And I gotta tell you, it's not usually my thing. Talking in between music, yes. Doing music radio shows, which I tend to do for stations but dotted around the world, mainly Europe, but a few in the States as well. But just talk without the music or without things to recommend or perhaps to inspire is a completely new thing for me. But here I am. I'm Johnny Rees, and this is my boo. I was thinking about a name for it, and I thought at first, should it be something to do with my usual location, which is North London, Crouch End in North London. I've lived here for many years, but I thought no, it should be maybe have a, at least to start off with, at least for this first one, which I've been asked to do, it should kind of have a musical theme of sorts. I think that's the way it should be, because that's what I work with. It's what I've grown up with. It's what I've always been involved in. It was to do with my work today, my program I did the other night, the colleagues I associate with, the colleagues that got on to me saying that I should record one of these. So I will do that. And if there's any more musically minded people out there who maybe feel the same way, who maybe feel very differently about some of the subjects and pieces of information I'm going to depart your way, by all means comment, because that's what this is all about. It's another extension. The audio boo, as far as I can see, is undoubtedly yet another extension of the social networking facility, which seems to go on, and it's just gathered speed. It started off slow and then completely exploded, and it strikes me that, you know, the entire world now is at your fingertips, at our fingertips, at basically just the touch of a button, which is incredible. But music, it is the main thing, because I've been involved in it and worked with it for a while. So that's what I'm going to speak about. And the first thing I just wanted to comment on, and many others have commented on it too, is art in music. Now, by that, I mean what has become a lost art, in my opinion. And I hope so many other people's opinions too. And that is album cover art. Because it really was. It's something that was lost, began to dissipate, if you like, when a lot of people, for a short time, it has to be said, a reasonably short time, started buying tapes, cassettes, which are dead and buried now, let's be honest. They really are. But when the CD generation began, there's a lot of arguments about when exactly it was, but the proper CD generation, I suppose, would have been early 1980s, really, early to mid-80s. That was quite strange if you were used to seeing a lot of well-thought-out, very arty, really great album covers. Suddenly to see them reduced to sort of less than quarter the size was quite an eye-opener, quite an eye-strainer, but that was very, very strange. And of course, suddenly things were looked at differently. And I'm a great lover of good album cover art, and still, even now, even though I've been buying records all my life, I still now can discover great, not only great music, which is a perpetual thing, because, you know, everyone, you just miss so much and you may discover it later on. I'm just talking about the art side for the moment. I'm still discovering great album covers, things with great style that you think, that's really incredible, and it just looks great, you know. And I know this to be true because when I had my own record shop for about a dozen years, I had a record shop in Crouch End. We sold for quite a while. We were very lucky. We managed to get hold of posters. And a lot of the posters were of album covers, vintage album covers, and adverts and such like. And some of the best sellers were the posters that referred to some classic albums from years gone by. A great deal of them were of the jazz era, of course. And I'm still kind of discovering them now because I'm still involved in music. Particularly the Riverside label, the Blue Note label, of course. If you look at those album covers, there's just a certain class, there's a certain feel about them. And that's without even hearing the music that's on them. It was a statement in itself. And as I always remember, and it still kind of affects me even now. Some people may think this is strange, but it's one of those growing up things. Some things stay with you. And there's a few album covers, but one in particular I can pick up now from the original album and open up the cover, and there's a certain buzz that I still get, even though it was a record that I bought when I was 15, you know, which is about 30 odd years ago, you know, because it's that, it's a whole thing, it's the whole style, your introduction to this new world, as it were, as it was for me then. Now, you don't really get that with CDs. And moving one step further, you certainly don't get that with download, because music has become a commodity. Things have moved on. It's very, very different now. One of the most interesting things that I found running a record and CD shop for so long was the age group that seemed to be more interested than ever in obtaining original albums on vinyl, I'm talking about. And many of that age group, and this is only a few years ago now, this is only 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, that age group were tended to be anything from about 14 or 15 up to about 25. And they wanted to collect, buy, keep, whatever, older albums, which they could easily either download probably for nothing from somewhere, or get them really cheap somewhere, or get a cheap CD or whatever. But no, a high percentage seemed to want to pay more for, or they wanted the original vinyl, and it had to have no scratches, and more than anything, because they could get the music elsewhere, the cover became almost as important, sometimes more important than the music, because the music is replicated, either it by download or on CD or whatever. But that cover, the cover art, the 12-inch square cover art, which sometimes is, you know, opens up into a wonderful gatefold, that cannot be replicated. You can hear the music on various formats, but you cannot replicate that sort of art and that work that's in front of you. And I think, I'd like to think, my case is proven, the case proven, my lad, by the fact that even now there are many books on the subject of great album cover art and what have you, and many posters still sold even today. They've just got a certain feel, a certain class about them. And I always think that's a shame, that that's such a lost art, album cover art, because that statement cannot be made. And I think maybe a lot of music has suffered because of that, because you don't have that opportunity to introduce what you're trying to do. Firstly, through sight, through that album cover, you don't have that anymore. It's just a straight commodity, which could be a download. And it's much more difficult, I would say. It's probably more difficult for artists now because of that. Because you cannot sort of generalise, you cannot categorise someone by just going to a download and seeing the name of a group and the name of a track. You can't do that. You don't really have any idea unless someone has pre-categorized it into, oh, that is R&B and hip-hop, or that is indie, or whatever. You don't have that visual clue at all. And I think that's a shame, because that was always kind of part of it. Going back further, there are those who... I'm not really a record collector, by the way. I may have given the impression that I am, but that's certainly not the case. I maybe used to be, but I wouldn't say collector. It's a dirty word, you know, in some circles, even for those like myself who run record shops. I just happen to buy things and like them and keep them. I don't think it made me a collector as such. It was nice to be surrounded by lots of things, and I did get my fair share, but I have to say only in a growing up stages, of 7-inch vinyl records. I think they were pretty important, you know, and I've still got some now. And again, part of it is the art. It was the colour, the design, the logo of record labels, different record companies. The paper sleeves, or in some cases, picture sleeves, which came slightly later, to match. Whereas then you moved on to the CD generation, and by and large, 95% of the time, it was your silver disc with black printing on it. So that side of it was lost. It sounds strange to talk about just a tiny little 7-inch single being kind of an art artifact, if you like. But it was, if you think of it that way. You only realise how important things like that are when they've gone, or when things have moved on, and you think, hang on a minute, what happened to those? You know, and it is purely a retrospective thing. At the time, it's just part and parcel of what you buy, if you want to buy music, you know. But suddenly, when it goes, that's what becomes noticeable. I'm not in the record retail business anymore. It changed a lot and I got out of it, but in an ideal world, I'd still be involved in it. I do my radio shows, album shows, instead, for various stations around the world, but that's still nice because I can play a mixture of new and old, and, you know, if I want to play a new release, I'll do it, or a forthcoming release, or if I feel like playing something from 50 years ago, I will do so. Having a record shop in Crouch End was a fascinating experience, to say the least. And I do remember, those who are a fan of the author, Nick Hornby, will perhaps appreciate this point. I do remember myself and my colleague, and we hadn't been open very long. And we were a couple of smart asses, really, because our music knowledge was pretty good. And a few people came in and said, oh, is this the shop mentioned and described in Nick Hornby's book, High Fidelity? Now, this happened, I think, I remember one day in particular, one Saturday. And this must have happened about a dozen times. And I'd never heard of this book. I wasn't much of a bookworm, really, and neither was my colleague in the record shop. And so at the end of the day, I just thought, I've had enough of being asked this question. This is something that I'm really going to have to investigate. So off I went down to the local bookshop in Crouch End, Prospero's, which is still there, I'm very glad to say. It's great to see some, you know, original shops survive, which is great. And I bought this book, High Fidelity, by Nick Hornby. And I remember, I'll never forget, I took it home that night, had me dinner, what have you. I sat down and I opened that little paperback book, and I didn't put it down. And I finished it, I think it was sometime around 6 or 7 a.m. the next morning. I couldn't actually put it down. And I'll tell you, it was so accurate. It could have been my record shop. It wasn't, by the way. I will admit that. It wasn't. But it could have been, because the book was finished and done before my record shop had even opened. Which kind of proves that it couldn't have been. Do you know what I mean? And I heard a rumour, and I don't know if this is true. It could have been, you know. It could have been anywhere. But I heard a rumour that some of it was based on a shop in Camden called Out on the Floor. I don't know if they still exist, that shop or not. But I think it was kind of an amalgam, shall we say, of stories from various shops. But it was great, and I really loved it. The film, not so good. They shifted the location to the States, and so the humour was different, and not so quite easily accessible. It became a little bit more brash, a little bit more arrogant. There was less subtle humour, because there's a lot more subtle humour in the UK, which of course formed a great part of the book, which was kind of lost in the movie. But I'm still glad they made it into a movie. It was pretty cool. I got rid of my record shop and passed it on to other former colleagues to ensure it remained a record shop. That was first and foremost in my mind, because I'd seen so many independent shops, no matter what they sold, whether it was clothes or any little trinkets or whatever, I'd seen so many automatically turn into either a coffee shop or a hairdresser's, that I had this rather bloody-minded determination that my record shop would not suffer the same fate. So I deliberately contacted other record shop colleagues and says, I'm getting out. Do you want my shop? I'd like to see it continue as a record shop. And they did, which is great, and they're still there today. So good luck to them, you know. Good on them. One thing that I have noticed recently, which is a very nice thing, because it is now, as I speak to you now, it's March 2010. It's almost 4 years since I got out of the business of retail record shop. But still, even now, I bump into people in the street, in the local area. They say, hey, I know you. You were that record shop guy. Which is really nice. It happened only yesterday, I'll have you know. And again, last weekend it happened, which is really nice. So maybe that's a good thing. Does anyone know if the King's Head pub still does a lot of musical things? I was thinking of hiring out their downstairs to do some music night, you know. Any local people, because I know these audio booths are very often classified by the area where the person is from. So I'd like to know if there's things like that going on, little music nights. There was a great place called Viva Viva, which I'm told now has closed down. Has it? I wonder. Are you meant to give out email addresses for contacts on these things? I don't know. I will do so, and I'm sure somebody will tell me off if I'm not meant to. But you can. You're very, very welcome. Comment on these things. On music, the lost art of album covers. Where's it gone? Where is it going? How's music changed? How's it changed for you? I'd like to actually know. studio@albumzone.co.uk. That's the email address. studio@albumzone, or one word, A-L-B-U-M-Z-O-N-E, .co.uk. And that's all tied in with the radio things that I do. Audioboo is something that I have to investigate a lot more. I've only just kind of heard about it the last few days. An old radio colleague asked me to record this, so I am. About half an hour of stuff, rambling incoherently. So I said, okay, I will do. And I've signed up. But one of the first things that I'm going to do later this very evening is investigate what audio booths are around, particularly from my local area. But in a way, it's not about a local area. It only is on this first boo from me. That's because it's my first one, but it's a worldwide thing. There's things from everyone on there. As far as I can see, I've had a little bit of a look on the index. What I'd like to mention is something that reminded me the other day, which just made me laugh, and I thought, well, I must tell you about this. Two separate little stories which were record shop related, as it were. The hassle we went through one day when a woman came in and she got our very sweet daughter to sing to us. We used to get sung to a lot, by the way. It happened quite a lot. And the little girl was desperate for this record that she'd heard on the radio. Our mother had not heard of it before. She didn't know what it was. And she went on and on about this record, which she was determined to buy, and could we find it for her? And she said it was called Alex the Seal. And we couldn't find a record called Alex the Seal. We just couldn't. We tried for hours and hours and hours. Eventually, once we got hold of some sort of tune, we discovered it was Our Lips Are Sealed by the Fun Boy 3. Which was good. But even better than that is my Led Zeppelin jacket story. Now, when growing up, one of the biggest things was you would advertise, not so much advertise or promote, but you would wear, in a way, your favourite band or artist proudly on your jacket or whatever. I had Roxy Music on the back of my jacket in gold studs, let me tell you. Lots of people other had other stuff. They had their Alice Cooper, they had their, you know, whatever. There was a smart-ass kid who was a big Led Zeppelin fan. Huge Led Zeppelin fan. And he was a bit smart, and, you know, little gold studs or, you know, stickers or sew-on denim patches, they weren't good enough for him, you know. He was better than that. Or so he thought. His mother did embroidery. Now, those musical people amongst you may remember the album Led Zeppelin 4, The Four Simples. And the painting, drawing that is part of the inner sleeve, which was the old guy with the lantern. Very mystical figure. Well, he said, oh, well, you know, my mother's professional embroiderer, I'm going to get that done on the back of my denim jacket. And it's going to be really cool, you know. It's going to be just absolutely, you know, it's going to blow your rubbishy jackets away, was his basic attitude on this. But, you know, we just thought, yeah, whatever, mate, you know, because he was a bit of a mouth, you know what I mean? So we were still going around with our, in our little gangs, because on the one side, it was a big two-sided thing. You were either in the Roxy, Alice Cooper, T-Rex, whatever, Bowie, etc., camp, right? And then there was the fence. And then there was the other side of the fence. The two didn't mix, because the other side were the likes of Genesis, ELP, and Yes, the dreaded prog bands. That was the opposite side. But anyway, you know, they'd have their fancy embroidery and what have you, and that was all fun. Some weeks passed, and then one day, in March, the Led Zeppelin kid with his wonderfully fancy jacket. And I've got to tell you, the work that was done by his mother on the back of the jacket was a work of art. It was absolutely exactly as the inner sleeve, probably even better than the inner sleeve of the Four Symbols album from Led Zeppelin. It was just an incredible piece of work. Obviously a very, very talented lady, no doubt about it. Just one thing. There was one thing very, very wrong with the jacket. And it was wonderful because the guy himself, I will not tell you his name, I better not. The guy himself didn't actually realise it. So he said, oh, look at my jacket. And he turned round, and the one thing wrong with it was the bottom part of it. There were the embroidery, there was the guy, there was a lantern, it was wonderful. But unfortunately, what his mother had done was at the bottom of it, she'd put in fancy letters, Led Zeppelin, Staircase to Heaven. Not Stairway to Heaven, to Heaven. The poor guy, of course, that was the one day of his life that he wore his fancy Dan jacket to school. We never saw the jacket again, because even if it had to, you know, be completely redone, whatever, he couldn't come in with a fixed one, could he? After that, after the shame and embarrassment of that, he couldn't do that. You can't do that. The Alex the Seal story and the Led Zeppelin jacket story. There are many other stories from those days which I might or might not go through with you at some point. But if there's anyone who feels interested in that radio side, album music, album cover art as being a lost art, music that should be heard and isn't, which is one of my big things, that's why I do mainly album shows, because it's music, you know. I don't want wallpaper of the same things going round and round. I don't see the point of that. You know what I mean? That's why I don't do it. Anyone that feels particularly strongly about that? How do you feel about music as a commodity? Or did you used to be a record shop owner? I'd kind of like to hear from you if you were, or even better actually, if you are. I'd like to hear about that. In future, Booze might do this once a week. I'm sure there will be different subjects to cover. I'm quite sure. Many different subjects, maybe some inspired by you, I don't know. I've got to get into the local area thing again. Because I worked away from the area for a little while. I was down in Norfolk for quite a while. And round and about and abroad for a little bit and things like that. And even though I've been around Crouch End for a long time, it's only in very, very recent months, shall we say, that I've been in the middle of that little enclave, if you like, once again. I was away from it, and I wasn't away from it, I lived in it, but I wasn't kind of involved in the social aspect of it for so long. What works in the area now, and what doesn't, I'd like to know. What works in your area? Because it'd be good, not just for the sake of the audio boo, or for future audio boos, that's not really the reason I want to know. This is interesting for me in a whole lot of other ways, and the musical side as well, the social side. Because it's subjects to tackle and things to tackle within the radio shows that I do for other stations, the music shows, I should say, that I do. It's things I can tackle within that sphere anyway. So I'd be interested to hear from you all about that. Reply to this audio boo, or let me know somehow, or drop a message to the email address I gave you earlier, which was, in case you forgot, studio@albumzone.co.uk. And finally, I passed by, this is what a lot of people do actually, I passed by Alexandra Palace the other day, only around the corner. Wonderful buildings, wonderful place with such history, particularly for people like the BBC. Isn't that rather underused? Or am I wrong? Am I wrong? I always think it should have been Ali Pali, as it's known, should be so much more. Or am I wrong? Is there a lot of things that go on there? Do you know? Let me know. Tell me. I know I don't sound like a Crouch Ender. I'm originally from Glasgow, but I've been a Crouch Ender now for over 15 years. So I kind of consider myself a local. I thank you for listening to the first boo, as they call it, the first audio boo thing. From myself, Johnny Rees. And we'll speak soon.